Tov, good morning to everyone, good morning to the students in front of me, and good morning to all those listening across the wide expanse of Jewish existence. I see Israel on screen, and Florida, and New York, and Chicago, etc. Today is Monday, November 30th, 2020, and we're picking up after yesterday, which I considered a very important shiur. I have to just answer general questions, meaning Rabbi Grinstein asked me in the middle of yesterday's shiur, I mentioned something about it, a good statement, and a good statement in relation to the World Zionist Organization, and I'm sure it's available online. I'll deal with it at the very, very end of this set of lectures on when we finish, when we're ready to start Torah V'Das, the last part of the OU, will, of the Synagogue Council, I'll deal with it. As I said yesterday, this is a class, an ongoing class. It began in 1978, and I follow a chronological order. I'm not dealing with contemporary issues. It just happens that min ha-shamayim, zikuni or lo zikuni, that the very issue we're dealing with becomes so contemporary it's beyond my comprehension. To go and dream that Rabbi Shubau would be mentioned in the Israeli press is beyond my comprehension, but Baruch Hashem. I just want to say to the students in front of me, yesterday, you chose to come today, not yesterday. Let me explain to you. On a scale of 1 to 10, the importance of being a Ben Torah and knowledge, yesterday's shiur was worth 10 points. Today she is worth 1 point, maybe 1 point. No, Ariane, you don't understand me. Sezaina guti yid, to be a good Jew, whether you know about Rabbi Shubau and the conservative movement, you'll be a good Jew, whether or not you know the Rav's opinion. But to understand yesterday, for the next 100 years, when Eli is learning, it'll give him insight when Kabbalah and Halacha conflict. You understand? It's two different worlds. All right, yesterday's shiur, I'm also asked, I mentioned a book, I guess I mentioned it too quickly. Please, those interested, the book on Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, and is Megadlo Umaramamato. It's in Hebrew, even though a book on Rav Scheinberg probably should have been written in English first, but the book is in Hebrew. Megadlo Umaramamato. Toldot Chayav Shel Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. That's the book I mentioned yesterday. The other book that I've mentioned and I'm asked about is a book with, if I take these two books, I can't lift them. I have to call a great-grandson to my house to lift the books. The other one is a coffee table book that must weigh 50 pounds. It's called America's Yeshiva. 1919, 2019, Yeshiva and Metifta, Torah V'Das. Both books have no authors listed. The one on Rav Scheinberg is published by Yeshiva Torah R, the yeshiva he founded. Torah V'Das published its own book. I also want to say to Herbie Maltz, who I don't know if he listens on Monday, but he listens Sunday, be aware that Herbie Maltz has a grandson who's a skilled dentist, a periodontist, and just got Yori Yon Yodin Smicha. And considering that Herbie came out of the Holocaust not able to read or write, he's my age, Herbie, so at the end of the Holocaust, he had to be 8, 9, and take a look, Lamahu Zachar, Chal HaKavod. Okay. Now let's pick up where we left off. It's a very fascinating shiur today, and it's a fascinating topic. But as I said before, to know Shasim Paiskim is essential. To know about Rabbi Shubau is an afterthought. But nevertheless, those who are interested, let me give the information. So what have we spoken about? We've spoken about the Cherem, the 11 Rosh Yeshiva, the three who didn't sign, the Rav, Rav Lezer Silva, and Rav Reuven Grzebski. Rav Reuven Grzebski is very fascinating because you're going to see when I come back to the Torah, to the Agudat Yisrael, pronouncement, I'm going to prove that I'm right. What do I mean I'm proved that I'm right? As part of the beautiful letter I quoted yesterday from Israel, my dear student Israel Shiner. So number two and number three dealt with Sunday's class. Number one, he says, Rebbe, you mentioned that Rav Reuven Grzebsky chose not to sign the 1956 Kol Kore so as not to offend the Rav. However, I believe this is mistaken, as Rav Reuven suffered a stroke in early 1941 and therefore ceased his involvement in the communal affairs, though he kept abreast of them, which is why he wasn't approached to sign it. In regards, in other words, he claims that maybe I'm wrong. I can tell you, Israel, with all my love for you, my memory is vague, but it does tell me that in 56, I recall as a smart kid already, who had graduated MTA, was first year of Yeshiva College, and had spent time in Lakewood. I wasn't a dummy at that time like I am today. I recall that Rav Reuven was asked to sign, and he said, we don't have to tell the Rav what to do. But I wouldn't depend upon my memory, but if you recall last week, I had a source where Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said, exactly, and he said, because Rav Reuven didn't sign, he was zeichet to have my son for a grandson-in-law. That's how the Soloveitchik and the Reberach Ber-Leibowitz families united. So I stand with a vague memory of Rakefet, but a strong statement that witnesses heard from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. So that carries the day to me, 2-1. But I'll prove I'm right. Circumstantial evidence, 99.99% certain, when we get to the Agudas HaRabbanim, Agudat HaYisrael contemporary statement. Okay, today I have a problem because I'm looking at the computer, but I want to look at my students in front of me. Now, this story has many versions about Rav Reuven's personal attitude to the Rav. I heard from my grandfather, Rav Reuven Shiner Zal, who studied under Rav Reuven in Teira Vidas and Beis Medrash Elyon, that one year he and a group of his friends snuck out and attended the Rav's Yahrzeit Shir, in other words, the Shir in memory of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav, which was acclaimed, and they were enthralled. Then, and by the way, you should know, the Rav in the 1950s, this was the apex of his ability. He reached the height of the mountain. The Yahrzeit Shiurim, it's, you can't describe it. I describe it in the Rav. Others described it in tradition. Unless you experienced it, it was like Matan Torah. The man, I mean, I give a shiur now, 2 hours, let's say, I'm going to speak. Fine. The longest shiur I gave in my life was the Hesped for Joe DiMaggio. That's over 3 hours. The Rav spoke 4.5 hours without a break. And you saw, you felt, I remember coming out of the shiur one year in the 50s, when we went in, the weather was nice. When we came out, it was snowing. It was 12 midnight. We didn't know where we were. We thought we were at Matan Torah. We thought it was literally Hasinai. You can't believe what the man achieved, the halacha, and then the agada, and Yiddish, and the Rav in Yiddish. You heard, there was nothing like it. If you think Rav Aaron Lichtenstein spoke a Harvard English, the Rav's Yiddish was Harvard plus Yale put together. Charlie, I apologize for mentioning Yale in the same breath with Harvard, but Baruch Hashem, Harvard plus Yale put together. So they were enthralled by the shiur. The next day, Rav Reuven heard about it, called in the bachurim who had attended, and rebuked them in a strong fashion for attending the drasha of the Rav. However, when he finished, he asked them to repeat the hymn, the Rav's shiur, and afterwards praised it, but still said not to attend in the future. And this story, I've heard the same thing about Rav Ruderman in Baltimore, that they went in, you know, they're from Baltimore, was a big ride, it was in Teira Vidas. They came in by the Pennsylvania Railroad, and They heard the Rav Shia, and then the next day Rav Uderman wanted to know why no one was at the Chabura that night, and they told him, and oh, terrible what you did. Zagiba, tell me what, oh, good gesagt, good gesagt. So, all right, that's a fairly good description of the hate and love attitude that the other yeshiva had towards the Rav. All right. Now, then we went into the heart of last week's shiur. We went into his interview. The Rav finally becomes a public figure. And Sam Dershowitz, Dr. Dershowitz, who I daven with, my neighbor for 50 years now. So Sam and I often talk about the Rav, because he's a Williamsburg boy, but he did the postdoctoral research, and he worked in the Boston area. He davened in Maimonides. He got to know the Rav very well. And as I told you, Sam is not an Amaritz. When he graduated Yeshiva College, two guys from that class got the award for Talmud. One is named Sam Dershowitz. The other one was named Aaron Lichtenstein. So I think it gives you a little idea what we're talking about. So Sam and I both agree, and Tova, and you'll hear Tova Atara when Atara spoke the same thing. By the 50s, the Rav already had a lot more self-confidence. The heartache of Boston faded into the background, the kashrut and all that went with it, and the scandal and the lies, and he now became a public figure. And the Morgenshoynal interviewed him, and they threw two questions at him: synagogue council, and what's your attitude towards the conservative movement? After all, they said, there's plenty of machloikis in the Orthodox world. Noah, if you talk about the Torah world, even in the 50s already, the right wing had become very powerful, and why you no longer had a monopoly. Torah Vadas was not a lightweight. Lakewood was on the map. Satmar was carrying on. And you have so much difference of opinion. And yesterday, Shia, could you imagine the tshuva from Rabbi Menachem Mendel? And as I told Tanachem Lamb, tell your father to ask Rabbi Yeruchim Yerelik what he thinks of that tshuva. Tell your father to ask Rabbi Noach Bernstein what he thinks. Ribbono shel Olam, you have so many different opinions. So the conservative movement is another different opinion. Do me a favor, give it right here. You have more Benjamin, give it to him. So the conservative movement is another opinion. They also claim they observe halacha. So the Rav, last week we answered the first question. The Rav answered everything in Yiddish. All this was in Yiddish, but it's been translated now into English, and it's been translated into Hebrew as well. And who would ever dream that the Israeli press, it's just, I can't believe it. I have to pinch myself. I prepared these lectures. It's not for Israelis. It's for Americans. It's for Anglos. And take a look. The Machloket, even the past weekend. And go and dream. Rabbi Shubo appears in Makor Rishon, in the Alonim, at Besheva. Unbelievable. But all right, Baruch Hashem. It's an open Gemara. Sadna di Arachadhu. The earth is one. Our problems in America, it's one and the same. Okay, so we explained last week, and I felt I did a good job of explaining the Rav's position. There are four key words. The Rav's rubrics, the Rav's catchwords, Adat Yisrael, Am Yisrael, that a Jew exists, the Jewish people, on two levels. On one level, Adat Yisrael, from the word aid, witness, testimony, Ariyan. We are testimony to God. We said, Naseh v'nishma, we are a Torah people. On that level, we have nothing in common with Jews who don't observe Torah. There's nothing we have in common. We live with the Shulchan Aruch, and North Tel Aviv lives with concepts of Obama and his friends, etc. And they live in a world where there's no God, there's no command. You can't tell someone what to do. Total freedom. Do abortions, premarital sex, men living with men, lo aleinu, women, I can't even pronounce these words, but you get the idea, euthanasia, and no one is ever able, Mesha, to tell you what to do. But that's the big difference of reform, conservative today. On the second level, Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael means Im, And there we are all united, we're all the same. Hitler didn't ask when he killed you, did you put on tefillin? Didn't he put on tefillin when the Arabs plant the bomb, lo aleinu, the terrorists, the mechablim, plant the bomb in Jerusalem, the bomb kills religious Jews, irreligious, on that level we're totally united, and chas v'chalila, we should divide or stand askance, we are all one. And on that level, we have to cooperate. Now, the Rav's viewpoint is extremely difficult to follow because it's a very nuanced viewpoint. And this was the Rav, the dialectical tension, the thesis, the antithesis, the synthesis. Very hard to find a synthesis here. Easy to say, the heck with reform and conservative, we walk away, we have nothing to do with them. Easy to say, reform and conservative, our brothers, our brethren, they're part of the Jewish gestalt, the Jewish history. Chas v'chalila, we should break with them. The Rav's viewpoint, as we will see, is when can we and when can't we? Okay, and I'll, at the end, weeks from now, I'll try to sum it up and tell you halacha l'maisa, how I feel, which, again, I'm a reflection of my Rebbe. I can't help myself. I have within me kanod. Believe me, I understand the feeling, the heck with them. On the other hand, I was in the cabinet, and I understand the American Jew. And one time, you don't even know this, in the Kollel, every year we used to have an outing, sponsored by the Jewish Agency, because they're paying something, I don't know today, but the agency paid something towards every student coming over and studying for the rabbinate in Israel. And part of the deal, we had to have an outing, a tour, to see what the agency wanted us to see, future rabbis, some will remain pulpit rabbis outside of Israel, and what you're going to raise funds for, what you have to encourage, and Reform, Orthodox, Conservative went. And of course, I accompanied, I represented the Rabbi Miller went, I went, we would go together, and it was quite an interesting day. And there were Reform, Conservative, rabbis, scholars, teachers, and I spoke with them, Menschlichkeit, you understand? My students said, Rebbe, you were friendly, you're laughing with them. I said, what do we accomplish if we spit in their face? You understand? It's a nuanced position. Okay. But let's leave this question over, and let's talk about the second question, because this is a great part of the first question. All right, Reform, you can say, close the door on them. But the conservative, and you have to understand, again, you people are sitting here in the year 2021. It's hard for you to conceive. Go back in time. I have a space machine. That's the only way you can study Torah history. You have to go back and live the period. Go back to 1956. 1956, the conservative movement said, we are halacha conscious. We observe. Go to Jewish Theological Seminary. The faculty, the Talmudic faculty, there was not one person who wasn't a great Talmud Chacham and wasn't a total Shema Torah Mitzvah. Professor Shaul Lieberman. All of us sitting in this room and all of us listening across the wide expanse of the world, put all our heads together, we don't equal the knowledge that Professor Shaul Lieberman had. Bucky in Shas, Bucky in Poskim, Bucky in the Yerushalmi, Bucky in the Midrashim. All right. He put down, if you remember my lectures, I always enjoy how he put down Jewish philosophy, and he always argued against it, Professor Heschel, that doesn't count, it's only Shas and Paiskim. All right, he was a real, real Litvak. He was the Chazon Ish's first cousin, after all. He was a real Litvak. But Professor Finkelstein, the Chancellor, Shema Torah Mitzvah 100% has descendants living in Israel, total from people. You got Professor Preschel, I taught his son, I taught his daughter. The one son who didn't study with me didn't come to BMTOYU. It wasn't frim enough for him. His daughter lives in Lakewood, his son lives in Lakewood today, the other son lives here, Baruch Hashem. And you can go on and on. Professor Sofer, an article of the Chatam Sofer. This was the faculty. So it's a very important question. They say to the Rav, you got enough machlokes among Orthodox Jews. So add another form, JTS. Now let us consider the second part of your question. Before I present my point of view, I would like to offer the following introduction. I have to tell you, this is quintessential the Rav speaking. You'll see it in my work on the Rav, quoting him word by word. I heard these thoughts from him many times. They said to him, why do you battle the conservative movement? So the Rav says, I use the term battle always in the ideological vein and never in the personal sense. I may attack a certain point of view which I consider false, but I will never attack a person who preaches it. I always have a high regard for the individual who is honest and moral, even when I am not in agreement with him. Such a relation is in accord with the concept of Chaver HaBriyot, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. Avot Perikimul Mishnah Yudchet. And see what the Rav is saying here, when you get involved in machloket, all right, they can be machloket, they can be sincere machloket, they can be controversy, but you have to separate the ideological confrontation from personal assault. Nothing is accomplished for the sake of argument. Many people living in the Torah world in Israel are not happy with Yeshiva University. All right, they will make a case. How can you have Torah and university under one roof? How can you leave people with the impression that the Judaic studies at Stern College are important, but just as important are the general studies? You can argue, fine, you can make a case. But to go and say that Rakefet, who taught at YU and was supposed to teach at Stern College, had he not gone on Aliyah, they wanted me to introduce American Jewish history there. I met people over the years who still think I taught at Stern College. I said, I never entered Stern College till I was in Israel. When I came back to America, there were times when I taka spoke and gave shirim in Stern College. But you'll say, Rakefet, why you? Rakefet is a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, about surreptitious, malevolent, ice. Bummy. Me. Got it? So what do you don't accomplish anything by that. You have to respect the person. In other words, if he's a moral person, obviously not moral, then there's nothing to respect. But if he's a decent, upright individual, but his hashkafas, his thinking is vastly different, all right, I can argue with him on the difference in opinion, but the respect to the human being has to be there. And this was the Rav. The Rav constantly boasted time and again. Look into my second volume where he talks about what is unique about Yeshiva University. And you'll see, he says, and time and again he repeated it, we're not going to win the battle by being negative. We're only going to win if we rise and show Torah is better and our learning is better and our dedication is better. And he says, the fact that we wear yarmulkes, the conservative rabbis wear yarmulkes too. What, today even Reform rabbis wear yarmulkes. That doesn't make you frum. But being a Talmud Chacham and living a proper life and showing what Torah is about, that's what's going to win sooner or later. Okay, now, then he goes in, he says, there exists a hypothesis that the conservative movement recognizes the authority of halacha. Let me analyze this a bit. The word halacha today, unfortunately, isn't style. Just as in the 20s and 30s it was fashionable in Western Europe and in America to use analytical jargon. And just as rabbis today like to operate in their sermons with psychological terminology, so it is now very popular in some circles to speak about halacha, halachic Judaism, etc. Even in the radical Yiddishist world, they toy with the concept of halacha. And you'll see what the Rebbe is saying here. He's going to spell it out. But what he's referring to, yes, Freud had a tremendous impact. And you got to understand, we Jews, what we have given the world, and all these movements that ultimately undermine Torah, every last one, Jews played a tremendous role. Karl Marx, Zayde, who wrote Svarim, was a Gaon be Israel. That's gay. I told you, in Russia, on every street, you would see the Getchkes. I mean, it's hard for you to comprehend this too. I've said time and again, in Russia, they were very smart. We come back, we believe in God. God is invisible. Halan b'seita, b'tzel shai kadai, right or wrong. In Russia, God was on every street. You would see the houses decorated with facades of figures like Mount Rushmore, Lenin, Marx, Engels, 2.5 Jews out of 3. Lenin's grandfather was Jewish. Marx, Engels, all Jews. And you take psychology, and psychology, I have to tell you, part of it is good, part of it is terrible. Over the years, remember, I entered the rabbinate, I left the yeshiva 60 years ago, exactly. But as I said yesterday, I soon have my second bar mitzvah, and I went into the rabbinate at the age of 23. So make the cheshbon, 83 to 23, 60 years. And I've been involved with psychologists, and sometimes you can hit your head against the wall. Your parents and the hatred, the enmity, and everything your parents did is wrong. And I can't repeat it now. I spent many years in the Kollel, and this Monday class, we dealt with it, Kibbutz Abiyeh, many years ago. And you should know, I've never met parents. Could be there's 1%, 2%. Parents who want to harm children, impossible. But we can make mistakes, yes, that's part of life. Plenty of parents came in Aliyah when we came, and there was no American presence here and no Anglo presence to speak of, and we didn't know the school system, and you could make mistakes. Our children began in one school, we took them out. I remember I asked the Shaila of Baron Lichtenstein. We took them out 2 years later, switched them to another school. But we didn't grow up here, we didn't know the system. But what psychologists have done, Freud, and then sex, and I don't want to go into any further, some of his theories, unbelievable. And his wife was the anical of Chacham Bernays. You have to know who we're talking about. I think he didn't let her light Shabbos candles. Check it out, those of you who have studied psychology. Check out the anecdotal history of Freud. But so the Rav says, yeah, they used to talk psychology, the 30s, the 40s, psychology, very big. Now, Baruch Hashem, he says, in the 50s, they're talking halacha, halacha. Now, he mentions the Yiddishist world. And this, too, needs elaboration. And believe me, Ariane, that's why I told off Ellie before, and you kick him out on Sunday, let him eat Monday, but kick him out Sunday. A good, strong kick that if you know about the Yiddishist and the Rav, you do or you don't know, it's not the end of the world. It's not Shas and Paiskim. But if you're sitting here, postgraduate students, intelligent students, let the Rebbe add a little knowledge to you. What is the Yiddishist? Okay, this is fascinating. And not many people know this or can understand it today. The Yiddishist movement was total anti-religious. It was the Bundist. Maybe at times it wasn't that anti-religious, but it's you don't need religion. That Yiddish and socialism and the worker, and it's going to unite us and this is going to save us. And I have to tell you, the Bundist movement was extremely powerful in pre-World War II Europe, particularly before World War I, it helped bring the Tsar down. And the Bundist was the Jewish branch of the socialist movement. Now, this reflected in America, the Shalom Aleichem Shkula. There was a whole educational system, and kids studied nothing to do with Yiddishkeit, Torah, but everything to do with Yiddish, with culture, part of it became Zionist afterwards. At first they were opposed to Zionism. Russia is wonderful, but communism, socialism, the workers of the world unite. But after World War I, a good deal of the socialism, this is Mapai, gave birth to Mapai, Mapam, Achdut Avoda, if you know the history of Israel. So the Rav had a very interesting relationship. The Rav actually spoke before the Yiddish groups in Boston, the Bundes groups, the Shalom Aleichem. He spoke, you have on tape. It was unbelievable, the man's knowledge of Peretz, of Shalom Aleichem, of the Yiddish literature. And they loved the Rav. His Yiddish was indescribable. Had a very warm relationship with them. Ultimately, I have to say, some of them, their eyes opened and saw without Torah, we can have all the Yiddish in the world. I mean, Rakefet claims that YU should go back. Benjamin, if I had my way, the whole yeshiva would go back to speaking Yiddish. And that would help you immensely remain B'nai Torah and not be influenced by the Western world. Because the problem is today, you speak Yiddish, you speak English, your Rebbeim speak English, you talk baseball, your Rebbeim talk baseball. You understand? When you speak Yiddish, it's a portable ghetto. Wow! An andere Sprach, an andere Gefühl, an andere Kultur. Okay, Ariane, I hope you understand me. Now, the Sfadim, what we would do in YU, we'd have a separate division in Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, and that's where, Baruch Hashem, they would speak modern Hebrew. But the Rav, so even in the Yiddishist world by the 1950s, you couldn't live in Boston where the Rav was the overwhelming figure, and his Saturday night shiur, which by the way was in Yiddish until it changed, I think, in the late 50s, like when YU changed to English, it was in Yiddish. I have tapes of the Rav Saturday night, magnificent Yiddish. So he's saying that even the radical Yiddishist world, they too today toy with the concept of halacha. It's become popular to talk about it. Now, here's the Rav. This is Rebbe, quintessential Rebbe. I do not enjoy appearing cruel, destroying a beautiful illusion, but I cannot help myself, and I must disappoint the halachic enthusiasts with the following statement. And of course, what the Rebbe is going to do here, he's going to say, yeah, halacha, it's not just the statement. Don't understand what halacha means. And here he gives 3 points that are critical to understanding what Torah is about. First, one must be a lamdan, just as one who speaks about mathematics or physics must have a thorough knowledge of the field. So must one first know the halacha in order to be able to discuss contemporary problems. But lamdanut cannot be achieved without study, nor by the process of divine revelation. One must sacrifice many years of halachic study in order to understand it. And of course, this is klal number one. Everyone talks about halacha, and today it's worse than ever, because all you have to do, I mean, I'm a medical doctor. Everyone, you have, the doctor told me I have meniscus. But my feet gave out to me 6 years ago in this very building. And what I do, the first thing I did, I Googled meniscus. Printed out 50 different pages. I became a goan in meniscus. It's very bad. Today, you have a halachic question. Shulamit Aloni wants to speak in the Knesset. Remember her? And she went to the computer. She got up and quoted my Murray Chazal. It was unbelievable. So that's playing games. But to really understand what halacha is, it's like a professor of math, a professor of chemistry. You can't get up and just use Google, legalgel, there's the Hebrew word, they turned it into legalgel. You can't just be atarakla lo yachol yot megalgel et hanosei, and then suddenly you're a professor. Halacha requires many, many years of study. I would say it's a lifetime of study. As I've said more than once, and some of you have heard this, when I left the yeshiva, 23 years of age, what did I know? What did I know? I got smicha, I had a master, I had two masters actually, and big deal. So you knew 100 daf gemara, even 200 daf, and a few simanim in your adaya. But Baruch Hashem, today I know a little bit more, but it's a lifetime of study. I'm not ashamed to tell you, one of the storm I studied already this morning was Aruch HaShulchan, was Halacha, Mishnah, Halacha, Tanakh, and the main thing, Daf Gemara. Today, that's my own learning. I mean, I'm not finished, it's ongoing, the Gemara once I begin. But, okay, enough is said. But that's the Rav's first point. Yeah, it's study. You can't come in upgeblossen in Yiddish, you know, big shot, you know. He did his homework on the computer, all right? The computer is helpful, there's no question. It's a tremendous aid to scholarship, but you got to know where you know and where you don't know. When I go and I talk about meniscus, I'm a tyro. All right, I have a little knowledge. I'm not in first grade anymore. But Shas and Paiskin with the Jewish history, where I have my advanced degrees, where I've spent a lifetime of study, I know a lot more than just getting a Google printout on meniscus. Secondly, one must unconditionally accept the sacredness of the halacha in its eternal and absolute character. One must confess that it obligates everyone to realize its demands in all times and under all conditions, social, political, cultural. One cannot be selective and say, this part pleases me and the other one does not. Light and candles I will accept, but not the laws of Tarat Mishpacha. Either one believes in Torah Min HaShamayim and one accepts the halakha in its totality, or one does not believe in this basic principle and accepts and rejects as he wishes. Now, I need not tell you, this is crucial. Do a survey of the conservative movement, 1956. I would say 98% of the women lit Shabbos candles. Mikvah? I don't know if there was one lady who said, I'm a conservative Jewess, who went to mikvah. And this is the heart. Any of you involved in outreach, any of you involved in dialogue with the new age world, as they call it, the millenniums. Remember, there's a whole issue of Jewish action. Yeah, this is the heart. This is the heart of the issue. Do you understand Shabbat, why I can't flip a light switch on? I remember one Shabbat, my wife had driven me to the Kotel, and she came on, and whatever it was, she didn't know how to turn the lights off, until she thought they turned, and the lights of the car were on all Shabbat. And a neighbor in the next building said to me, are you a Tamat Turaf? Maza, Tiskar, you know? How can you leave? It totally drained the battery. I had a miracle. It didn't drain the battery. I was able to start it after Shabbat. But she looked at me. You see, the whole concept of surrender, Naseh V'Nishma, is lacking. And the truth of the matter is that Tarat Mishpacha can... It happens to be, it's one of the halachot that is probably the easiest to explain if someone's willing to listen. Kedesha techei chabiba bala kashnat knisata l'chuppa. I can't go into details now, and also in my age, I let women speak to women and men speak to men. And when 50 years ago, I did speak to, in Mechon Gol, there were women who later thanked me, like, beautiful letters. The Tarat Mishpacha was a result of all their life. I mean, they're grandmothers today. Some of them are great-grandmothers already. And it was all the result of my lectures in Machon Gold. But you have to understand, this you can explain, but the person has to be willing to listen. But the average person, you talk, I a sexual desire, what's the matter? At least it's my wife, you know, who'll say to you, how can you be negative? And we have showers in the house, I don't have to tell you. But of course, a mikveh has to be kept up properly. I have to say, in Yerushalayim and elsewhere in Israel, there's some beautiful mikvot, state of the art. Even it was built by American funds. I remember Rabbi Kowalski, Zichrono Livracha, led the drive. There's a mikveh here in Baca where a crippled woman who's in a wheelchair can go to mikveh. Where the pulleys are lowering, and they have it worked out. Lekavod ulatiferet. And I don't have to tell you, I spoke about, we mentioned this in class, after class yesterday, in what we were discussing. But you see, before the birth control pill, so people were more modest in their sexual life. Today there's a total, absolute breakdown. And Taharat Mishpacha is needed more than ever, because it ensures the stability of marriage. The words in the Gemara, Chaviva Balaka Shatkani Satala Chuppa, are magic. Those words are absolutely magic. But I need not tell you, when you start choosing, go and explain to someone, what's wrong? Ellie and Ariane were in Baca, and they walked to the Kotel and walked back. From Baca to the Kotel, where they were living, a 55-minute walk. What are you, crazy? It's Shabbos. How do you exhaust yourself like that? And to switch a light switch, that is forbidden? I don't understand. I can't accept it. You rabbis are crazy. The whole concept of family lineage, that we, mamzerut, and a kohen to a giyoret, a kohen to a gerusha. You get involved, the modern mind, I can do what I want. I'm not breaking your windows. I'm not doing any harm to you. Freedom, democracy, liberalism, the French Revolution, the American Revolution. And this is a tremendous challenge. And I need not tell you what the Rebbe is saying here. You talk about the conservative movement. The best story that I always tell, and is a true story, I think it was 1947. In 1947, the Committee on Jewish Law of the conservative movement dealt with electricity on Shabbos. Again, I dealt with this in great length of my lectures on the conservative movement. I don't want to repeat myself, but just very quickly, you should understand, they went with the Committee on Jewish Law, majority vote. But majority vote doesn't obligate you, as long as any opinion had three people out of the 23 on the committee, had an opinion that agreed, you can choose. So you would have a majority opinion, a minority, like Yontif Sheni. The one opinion was we have to observe Yontif Sheni. One opinion was that you can abolish Yontif Sheni in Gullis. One opinion was if you have a minion, keep it. If you don't have a minion, you can abolish it. And it came, these questions came up, electricity. No, the students, the rabbis, majority opinion, you can turn electricity on, Shabbos, Yontif, no difference, etc. And at that time, Professor Finkelstein gave a gift to the students in the dormitory, a Hanukkah gift. It was mamish now. He put a time clock in every room. And there was such a contradiction, but it caught the conservative movement. You're choosing, you're picking. And you can go on and on with every aspect of Shabbos and every aspect of Chashmal and innovation and Taharat Mishpacha. And going to a grusha, halacha doesn't work that way. If you accept the halachic system, then it has to be total. Naseh v'nishma. We have to study it. We have to learn. We have to see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants out of us. But it's not that we have to approach it, that we are the decisors. We will decide what's good for me. And that's what I said yesterday, that We were raised Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Today the world is raised Lo Aleinu, but you go to the average person, what's your name? All right, my name is Yochanan. He says Shema Yisrael, Shema Yochanan, Yochanan Eloheinu, Yochanan Echad. What Yochanan, he decides everything. And this is the world we live in. And I have to tell you, it's very frightening. I see even Rabbanim, even people who have learned, but their Rebbeim did not succeed. And there's one simple, I said this yesterday, I repeat it again, one simple example that's news right now. The whole question of opening up the economy of the country. People are going to die. This went on in America. This is going on here. This went on in Europe. People are dying from corona. Open up the economy or people are going to drop dead. They don't have money. And a rabbi just came out now, published, that we, in one of the Alonim, the weekly freebies, that Talmud Chacham so-called, we have to open up the economy because otherwise too many people will be hurt. People will die? People will die. Triage, that French word. This is totally against halacha. Against halacha, we should all be living on pennies. We should all be living on carrots and potatoes. So we can't get cream cake and cream pies, etc. and sufganiyot. Here, look at it. They make sufganiyot here. You're just looking at it. You gain weight. You understand? That I wanted to bring home for my wife. The cream goes all the way up. You can't even carry it. You have to go. Replenish your life. But people die, elderly. Let the elderly people die. All right, I'm elderly, so staying. Let them die. All right, I feel bad because I'm in that class. But I feel bad halachically. How do you say a thing like that? Pikuach nefesh? What we Jews, and I have to say, credit to Israel. You all know in Canada, there was a time, it may still be, anyone over 80, I think it was, they didn't give it, the attitude was, let them die. We don't have enough medicine to go around, enough doctors, etc. Some from Jew, they had to go to court to force the hospital to treat him. I have to say, when my mother went into the hospital at the first, my mother was well and active till 95. Then she fell and broke her hip, and she never totally recovered. Then from that point on, it was downhill. But 3 years later, she went into the hospital. They worked on her like she was not 95, not 98, like she was 18. I mean, I saw such dedication, no one giving up, no one saying, look at her age, we'll do what we can, we'll do what we can. And it wasn't that I had protexia. They had the doctor in charge was a Russian Ola, which a lot of people are talking now, how the Russians changed the country. Only later did I give him my book, Washington, and it had just come out, and she went up to heaven. She couldn't believe what the kids from America risked their lives and did in Russia. But I had no, but it was a different attitude. And this is the challenge. When you say halacha, fine, it's beautiful. Chabad does magnificent things. They give out this Elisha, what's her name? Chayamovich, I think her name is. Yoma, am I right or wrong? Shelly Yachamovich, whatever the name is. She's a Chaveret Knesset, a leftist of a leftist. So she said, I'm lighting Shabbos candles this Shabbos because Trump lost. I want to thank God. You're living here. You don't know this. Where are you living, darn it? And then, you know what happened? She got hundreds of sets of Shabbos candles, the Chabad candles, Chabadnikim, non-Chabadnikim. So the next week she announced, I'm only lighting once, she said. I thank everyone who sent Zashmata. But that's very nice. Chabad gives out, you like, all right, you're doing, but that's not acceptance of halacha. Halacha means the Vah Hashem. It demands obedience. And that's what the Rebbe is saying. That's what he taught me. That's the way I live, etc. And that's what I've taught tens of thousands of students over the millennium. Okay. Thirdly, and this is very important, the interpretation of halacha must be accomplished in accordance with the methods, principles, and categorical forms of the halachic language which were hammered out by the sages of the Torah, Rishonim, Achronim, Rashi, the Tosfot, Rambam, the Shach, Rabbi Kivega, Rabbi Chaim Briska, etc. The sustenance of the halacha is tradition. Not only the content and the text, but also the formal instruments of halakhic thinking have been handed down from generation to generation. Well, here I have to tell you, this is the heart of the issues today in the Torah, in the Orthodox world. Not if the conservative movement already is out of halakha. But you see, when you talk about, let me use an example we spoke about in class in great detail last year. And it hurts me to talk about this because Rabbi Emanuel Rachman I knew intimately. His son was my chavruta, 1951 through 1953. And we're still in touch, Michael, his eldest son. And all the boy, he had three fine sons. But see, Rabbi Rachman came up with the catchword, Hafkat Kedushin. And that word caught on, and you have to understand something. Of course there's Hafkat Kedushin in the Gemara. But you have to understand the whole process, what I call the dynamics of halacha. You just can't take a word and say, well, we have the text, we have the tradition. Yes, but you have a whole formal method of thinking, how you can use it, when you can use it, how do you approach it, how do you answer a question, and this is the halachic method. What the Rebbe always called the lamdanit method, the method of lamdis. The interpretation of halacha must be accomplished in accordance with the methods, principles, and categorical forms of the halachic language which have been hammered out by the Rishonim and Achronim. And this is a lifetime of learning. You look into the Achronim, in order to paskin a shaila, you need shimush. And the Achronim already say the greatest shemish in the world are the Sifrei Shelot and Tshuvot. And that's how you learn how to paskin. And what can I tell you? Even a lowly, humble servant named Aaron Rakefet, I was Matar in Aguna. Could you imagine? I have the schut, it's Rav Ovadia placed his hands on my shoulders and said, you're absolutely right. It appears in the ninth volume of the Heter of the Aguna with the Yibum, with Russia. I write about it in Washington. But well, how is I Zoycha Latir in Aguna? It's the halachic process. A Sveik Sveika, I'm putting it together. I'm putting Shitat Rishonim together. And I developed a whole tshuva. And all the Batei Dinim that we went to here, it went through a whole process, because it's not that you can go into Reb Moshe and walk out with an answer. Here you have to do it officially. So the Batei Dinim said, no, the thinking is wonderful, but we don't have a strong enough backbone. Go and ask Rav Ovadia. And the rest is history. And Rav Shol Yisraeli agreed, and Rav Shalom Mashash agreed. I had to get two others to agree with Rav Ovadia. And it was published later. I give you the source in Washington, and then it was published later by Rav Ovadia. And Kol HaKavod, the man's knowledge overwhelming. What I quoted 10 sources for, he quoted 100 sources. And this is what learning is about. Hafkat Kedushin, look at Rakefet's. I apologize for quoting myself, but what can I do? There's nothing else I can quote that does it as clearly. Rakefet Aron Chelik Dalid, 100 plus pages on Hafkat Kedushin, just the concept. When you've gone through that, you can understand what the difficulty is with Rabbi Rachman's just saying, wholesale Hafkat Kedushin. Anyone has a problem in marriage, all right, we can be Mafkiya Kedushin. It doesn't work that way. And here you see Rabbi Rachman left the feeling, the imprint, the thought that the whole problem is that we have an Eitzah, but the rabbis don't want to use it. And that is not true. We can have an Eitzah, but we have to understand the halachic dynamics, how to use it, when you can use it, which way you can use it. And this doesn't allow a wholesale answer. Yes, there's mekach ta'ut. There you can very readily utilize mekach ta'ut, which appears like hafkat kedushin. It's not really. It means that originally there was the man never revealed to the woman that he had psychological problems. He had been treated by psychiatrists for years. All right, he never revealed it. Had she known, she would have never married him. There, perhaps, you have mekach ta'ut. That's the Reb Moshe Feinstein. The man is impotent. By the way, today's a sad story. Many women would know before they're married whether the man is impotent or not. But the man is impotent. In a Torah world, the woman would never know. It's the Gemara in Kedushin, right? Simfon, the whole sugya, what you know, what you don't know. The woman would never know. No, they get married, the man is impotent. The man is impotent. No, what's marriage about? To have children, to have relations. All right, there's room. But on the other hand, you'll take a modern situation where the man barely makes a living and the woman makes five times his salary. Had I known he'd such a schlemazel, I would have never married him. No, that doesn't apply. Ribbono shel Olam, how can you go and retroactively annul a marriage 20 years later with five children because of these problems? Okay, I don't have to tell you. This, the Rav hits the nail on the head. It's very easy to say, fine, I appreciate halacha. Very easy to say, I will accept the totality. But when it comes already to paskening, to the most delicate, difficult questions we have, here you have to be a first-rate Talmud Chacham. But in addition to a first-rate Talmud Chacham, your pulse has to be on the dynamics of halacha, the halachic process. You have to know how to paskin. And there's the tradition of dore doret, of learning. This is what learning is all about. This is what yeshiva is all about. This is what the kollel is all about. This is my course on Shelot and Shuvot, what I opened here in 78. This is a whole new world, but it opens to you how we paskin. I remember students who come looking at me right now, they often said to me, halavai, we would have had a course like this at YU when we were studying for the rabbinate. All right, it doesn't work that way. Baruch Hashem, every generation adds, and Baruch Hashem, we have a course like this. Perhaps others can give it now, and it opens the world to you in Pesach. And this, where the Rav goes on, he says, let's look at the conservative movement. Let's look at what they have done. And let me just find it. Here it is. And he says, how can we have halacha in common with the conservative movement if they permit riding to the temple, meeting the synagogue on the Sabbath, permit marriage between divorcees and kohanim, permit changes in the traditional prayer service, permit the introduction of mixed choirs in the temples, and other similar matters? And here's the heart of it. By the 1950s, the conservative movement had made many giant steps away from halacha. The greatest one, the responsum of 1953, written by three conservative rabbis who all came from Torah backgrounds. One of them was the son of a big Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Adler. His father was Rosh Yeshiva of MTJ. When his father died, Reb Moshe Feinstein succeeded his father in MTJ. But Rabbi Adler of Detroit and Rabbi Agus of Baltimore, who was the third rabbi? Rabbi Friedman, I believe. No, Rabbi Friedman. One second, Rabbi Agus. Anyway, three rabbis whose background was Orthodox permitted driving to synagogue on Shabbat. Yeah, you talk about Kohen to Grusha, Kohen to Giorah. It's a very hard sale in the modern world. What's wrong? She's a lovely lady. She's a fine lady. Yeah, but There's a Dva Hashem Zu Halacha. Right now, you should know in the news, they were matir a kohen to a grusha, but through the halachic process. Are you aware of it? In Haifa, the case in Haifa, always the case. Older people, she was divorced many years ago, never remarried. And they're past the age of childbearing. And she met this person, it worked out, and he discovered he's a Kohen. I don't know if they're religious, not religious, but he discovered he's a Kohen, which seemed to indicate either they're not religious or they're Balei Tshuva. And they come to get married, and they discover a Kohen to a Giora, to a Grusha. So they did the investigation into her original marriage. Turns out that she was married by a rabbi who was disbarred years ago. It turned out, lo aleinu, I apologize for talking about such terrible things, but we've had too many cases like this. A rabbi who was a sex fiend. Well, he was influenced by the Western world, sex without limit. God have mercy, the way they live, the way they talk, the way they speak. I know too many cases like this. Too close to home. And he was disbarred in Israel. So it turned out if this man had so many sexual sins, he was pasul le'edot. He was the eid at the wedding where he was mesadek kedushin. If this is the case, she was never really married. So then you get involved, but she got a get. But she didn't need a get. So it's a whole machloikis between the Ashkenazic world and the Sephardic world. Reach get it's called. I don't know if you studied that in Ezra yet. And they paskind, according to the Sephardic poskim, reach get is not enough to pasul her for a kohen. In addition, you then have an additional sniff. Again, I trust you've heard my shirim over the last 40 years, and you know what I'm talking about, how to paskin, what a sniff is, the shach, I think it's a shach. I think it's more than 40 years already, 78, I don't know, make the cheshbon, 22, 20, 42 years. Then there's the sniff that if you say you're a kohen, you're really a kohen, becheskat kohen, but it's not vadai. So here, if you take that sniff, that there's a suffek kahuna, and in addition, the aid is pasul, they were able to be matir the second marriage. And they added on also that here, we have to do what we can lahakel, because the older you get, the harder it is to find the shidduch. And here, these are older people, and they're in love with each other, and they want to marry. It's a beautiful tshuva. It was just publicized within the last week or so. But this is what the Rav is referring to, that it's not just enough to surrender to halacha. You have to know halacha, but you have to know the halachic process. And here you're talking conservative. What kind of halacha when the conservative movement, whoever speaks of the halacha, we are unable to perceive what kind of halacha it means. The halacha of Rabbi Akiva, Rav Ashi, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Ramah, or a new kind of halacha which was invented at the conference of the rabbinical assembly, where halacha is, by the way, very convenient and very modest in its demands. And the Rav has answered the question, and there's something interesting here, because the Rav says, I'll paraphrase it, I don't have to read it, but I'll paraphrase it, that the Rav says, you have to understand, when the conservative movement gets involved in the laws of marriage and innovates, it's not only affecting this generation, but all the generations that come afterwards. And I need not tell you, this is Mamzeret. if chas v'chalila you mater a woman to remarry without a get, the children are mamzerim. Mamzerit is not something that ends at the end of one generation or 10 generations. Mamzerit constantly passes itself, reproduces itself. Take another case, which in the conservative movement is zil kribe rafu, it's axiomatic. You permit a kohen to marry a convert. You permit a kohen to marry a grusha. The children are halalim. They're no longer kohanim. You've removed the beautiful status of kahuna. To have kahuna is an extra gift, right or wrong. Doesn't the Gemara say that the kohen, Talmud Chacham, to marry a bat kohen? Doesn't the Medrash talk about bat kohen? She's entitled to a greater dowry? And I always say, you talk about pluralism, in Yiddish, in Torah, there's no such thing as pluralism. Mesha, the only pluralism we have is the tripartite division of the Jewish people. Kohen, Levi, Israel. No such thing as Orthodox conservative reform. But, and the Rav says, the conservative movement has to learn from Israel, from the Mapai, from Ben-Gurion, that even they understood they couldn't change the laws of marriage because it would create an eternal schism among the Jewish people. And you have to realize in the state of Israel, until today, and it's not going to change because Baruch Hashem, a lot of good things are happening here. With all the problems, Kanayin Hara, the outreach is fabulous, even in North Tel Aviv. Remember, we're fighting a tremendous battle against Obama, against here Biden, a practicing Catholic, all his kids intermarried with Jews, all his grandchildren Jewish, a vice president of America, married to a Jew. It's unbelievable. His kids from Israel call her Mamala. It's beyond words what we have. You're fighting a tremendous battle, a world that doesn't care about Yiddishkeit and surrender and won't surrender and doesn't give a hoot about intermarriage and assimilation. And we have to preach Dvar Hashem. But we're winning. We're winning. And in Israel, you got to give all the credit in the world. No one can get married without the permission, authorization of the rabbinate. In America, you go to City Hall to get a marriage license. Here you have to go to the rabbinate and everything is checked. And this is why they're complaining bitterly. They have to run to Cyprus for civil marriages. All right. But at least the schism is not here. And Ben-Gurion understood that. And kol hakavod. And the Rav says that very beautifully. Now, listen to this last paragraph. I'm going to comment. This is very important. Let them, the conservative Jews, not commit the same error which Ben-Gurion committed with his obstinacy pertaining to the conscription of women and with his disregard for the pious Jew. As chairman of the Halacha Commission of the RCIA, I would like to serve notice that we shall unite with the entire orthodoxy in order to defend the halachic principles of the sacred laws of purity of the family. And what's the Rav talking about here? This is the way he ends off. This is the way the interview ends off. Very powerful. And here I have to explain it because there's a level behind what we just read. Something deeper here. You see, in Israel, the greatest achievement, I need not tell you, the state of Israel, we have an army. It's probably the most advanced army in the world, and our weapons, I need not tell you what we have. I was privileged to do basic training. I served in the army for 15 years. I know the army inside out. All my sons-in-law served, and all my grandchildren. I have, as I mentioned yesterday, a first grandchild who's a career officer. But more than that, I have a Baruch Hashem, let me not talk about my grandchildren, but one is getting, among many others, getting a PhD from the Technion, and he's in military research. One day he'll get Pras Yisrael, Bitachon, his name will never be mentioned. And Malka and I visited a few times the Technion. We had quite a few grandchildren there. And his professor, you know, he meets the parents, grandparents. People came in Aliyah 50 plus years ago, integrated, Mossad work, books published about what we did in Russia. So they became very friendly, and the last time we were there, the professor said, we're going to do a display for you of what your grandson has discovered. And we had to sign, the third time in my life, I had to sign secrecy clauses, not to reveal. I signed three times in my life, Russia, and then with the Baumel, of when I changed, when my innovative thinking changed the policy of the army regarding missing in action. That's not for now to go into all details, but may have been my greatest achievement as a result of knowledge of halacha. Okay, and now I had a sign. We had a sign again. Okay, so they did a display. It cost money. They put it on a display. It was not a simple matter. So at the end of it, I asked the professor, look, when this becomes operational, every advanced army in the world will want this. Who will make the money? We're talking millions, billions of dollars. So he answered me, Sheila tova sha'alta. Lo ha-nechet shelcha, lo ani, ksat bi Technion, Haifa. Ksat l'medinat Yisrael, avol ha-kesef ha-miti l'pituach ha-machshirim shel ha-tzava, meaning Raphael. And we not only have an army here, but you have a tremendous arms development, what goes on in Israel, Raphael selling. What a miracle. What a miracle. Do we have an army? Have unity? Okay. But right afterwards, the question of foot soldiers, and how do you have enough soldiers? We were a small country. Add to that, that the army played a big role in Kibbutz Galyat, in the melting pot of all the different types of Jews coming in. And Ben-Gurion and cohorts came up with the idea to draft men and women. And you have to understand, you go back to socialism, you go back to communism, you go back to Mapai, you go back to Mapam, you go back to Achdut Avodah, you go back to the kibbutz movement, men and women are absolutely equal. There is no difference between them. They all go to work, they all have to work. Men can't have children, women produce children, but all right, so for a few months they won't work, they won't do. Everyone has to be equal. Everyone is part of this melting pot, the great army, men and women. You have no idea what a machloket this was in the 50s. Now, you see here that the Rav says, don't make the same mistake. Don't be obstinate. When it comes to family purity, and it doesn't mean here mikveh, it means proper sexual behavior. By the way, Yom, I don't think the mic is working. Check what's happening, or it's not loud enough. Is it on? No, I'm getting. Okay, thank you. When it comes to family purity, we're using it in the sense of proper sexual behavior. And here, the Rav is adamant it was a very bad mistake, and you have no idea the battles that were fought over Giyus Banot, or Giyus Nashim, in the 50s. Now, this is the Rav speaking, and he says, Ben-Gurion, Giyus Nashim, or Banot, I think is the expression, and his disregard for the pious Jew, and he laughed, and they mocked, what, the men and women are equal, it's a new world today, etc. And this was, you have no idea. Now, the Rebbe says, I want you to know, don't make the mistake of Ben-Gurion on matters of family purity, on matters so basic to halacha. All of us are Orthodox. It doesn't matter whether rabbinical council, whether Agudas HaRabbanim, whether Igor HaRabbanim, whether Litvakin, whether the Hasidim, we will stand united with the entire Orthodox community. Fine. Very strong statement. Gentlemen, does anyone have a question to ask? I'm looking at all those listening. Anyone have a question? Go to the computer that we spoke about and type in this issue, and you will find a live discussion review, and you will find someone testifying that the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva in America, exactly at this period, a little earlier, exactly at this period, wanted the Rav to join with them in public statements, public demonstrations against Giyus Nashim. Yahoreg v'al ya'avar. And the Rav comes to this meeting. Reb Baron Cutler was there. I believe Reb Mendel Zaks was there. I mean, people who the Rav knew intimately. The Rav comes to this meeting and they start talking about this issue and how to fight it publicly. And there is sworn testimony that the Rav got up and said a guten tag to the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva, and Gerufi called them the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva. He spoke to Rav Zaks, the Ratner Rosh Yeshiva, said a guten tag, and walked out. Benjamin asked a simple question. Fife it out. What's the question? Here the Rebbe is saying he's going to fight to the end. And here we have Eidut Nemana, that he walked out. What's happening? All right. I'll tell you what's happening. I'll tell you what's happening. The Rav was opposed to drafting women 100%. Torah viewpoint. Look into the Sugi and Sota. Milchemet Mitzvah, even the Chatan V'Kala have to serve. Look into the Rishonim, look into the Radbaz, look into the Nosei Kelim on the Rambam. The men went to battle. The women were in logistics, food, clothing, supply. They're not fighting. That's the man's task, not the woman's task. So yes, and a Melchemet Mitzvah could very well be that the women have to be today in intelligence, in cyber computer knowledge in the army. I mean, these are very important. Without that, you cannot survive today. To take women, turn them into artillery, tankists, pilots today. The Rav was absolutely opposed. But what he refused to agree to were public demonstrations. He was very upset when Shrum Jews demonstrated in front of the American consul in New York against the state of Israel. And there's no contradiction here. On one hand, he was opposed, just like the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva and just like the Ratner Rosh Yeshiva and everybody else. But he was also opposed. We write letters, we make statements, we keep it within the family. We don't wash our dirty linens in public. Ariane, how do I know that my answer is correct? This is really, I'm right, this is all written up now. where I give you all the sources. It'll be published, Be'ezrat Hashem, Rakafar Aaron Chelik Hei, give you all the sources. How do I know I am right? Let me take you back in time. Yitzchak, I don't know if you were in the Rav's class yet, because you came in a year or two after me, but talking to Rabbi Reuben, he's looked up, he saw I'm reaching him. But let me tell you a story. The early 50s, this had to be, or right afterwards, mid-50s, Sakma held a tremendous demonstration against the Rav outside the consul on Park Avenue. I don't have to tell you, the New York Times picked it up with glee. Hundreds of Satmar in black. At that time, they were the only ones that appeared in public in black. It's not like today where everyone is wearing a uniform. Demonstrating against the state of Israel. And it probably was on this very issue, Giyus Nashim. And the next day after the demonstration, the Rav comes into class, and we couldn't control ourselves. We said to him, Rebbe Vos Trachtman, what do you think about the demonstration? And the Rav looked at us with anger, and he said, the Gentile world, their hands are still covered with the blood of the 6 million. And we go and demonstrate against the state of Israel in front of these goyim. And the Rav was furious. And that's how I can tell you I am positive my answer is correct. Here you see black and white that the Rav was opposed to Giyus Nashim. Black and white. Says it openly, strongly, stridently. And here they've published Eitad Nemana, which I believe, I know the people involved, and they're telling the truth. And the Rav walked out, I couldn't talk, Radna Rosh Yeshiva, I couldn't talk, Kletzka Rosh Yeshiva, walked out. What's going on? But my answer's correct. The concept of Giyus Nashim, he was opposed. To demonstrate publicly in front of the non-Jews, the New York Times should dance with glee and joy. Jews, the Hagen and Sichene, the Andere, Jews are killing each other, disgracing the state of Israel, which the New York Times hates because it bothers their conscience. There's still Jews in the world. There's still Jews who care. There's still Jews who don't assimilate. Jews who don't intermarry. A state of Israel, 2 million plus Shai Mishabes Jews already. A state of Israel where the right wing will win every election. There's no way the left can swing the next election. No way. They're frustrated. Go back in time. Then the chutzpah. Jews demonstrating. State of Israel. Ah, they love it. They love it. And the Rav walked out. So, okay, this is the way I understand it. I hope I'm correct. Now, so this is the Rav's attitude. This is the Rav's position. And you can understand it very well. Am Yisrael, Adat Yisrael, everything we spoke about last week. He certainly has explained very succinctly, and I would say very beautifully, where we differ from the conservative movement. What's fascinating, how life moves on, dar dar v'dashav. What's fascinating is how we Torah Jews remain constant. I'm sitting here in the year 2021, and I'm no different than my Rebbeim in the year 1956. And my Rebbeim are sitting and teaching us in Washington Heights, and they're dreaming and thinking and feeling where they were 50, 60 years earlier in Telz, in Slabatka, in Mir. Torah continues, Oto Geveret Bishinui Aderet. It's a modern Hebrew expression, a beautiful expression. It's the same lady, except she's wearing a different dress. And the Rebbe always, he quoted it, would stress it. I'll never forget this hesped for the Tona Rebbetzin, where he spoke in terms of the old lady that we have to dress in contemporary clothes, but it's still the same lady, the same Torah, the same attraction, the same message. Yes, that has remained constant. You know what's amazing? How the world is constantly changing. And these very problems that we spoke about, you talk about drafting of women today, that's one of the major topics on the Israeli scene, not the drafting, that the women are demanding. They want to be frontline soldiers. They now have pilots, women. And that women are capable, we all know that. That women can do intellectually what a man can do. Yes, there are differences, by the way, that men, women are better at writing, at emotion, at expressing themselves. Men are better at mathematics. It's interesting that ultimately they'll find there's a slight difference in the brain of a man and the brain of a woman. We each have certain abilities that are different. It's fascinating. But that women can be top quality lawyers, that women can be heart surgeons. But do we want women to go into battle? Again, I need not elaborate. Could you imagine a man being captured and a woman being captured and what happens to the two? Don't want to go further. It's frightening. Torah? All right. Milchemet Mitzvah. Women want to serve in the army and we can't stop them today. I have a different theory, I have a different viewpoint. My wife and I, halavai, women should be taught that their main responsibility is home, not profession. But okay, you can't change the world. Even my grandsons quote us and start to understand us. When their kids come home from school, my great-grandchildren, there's no one home, not the father, not the mother. All right. In America today, kids are raised in homes on the coast, in homes in Florida. The kids speak perfect Spanish. I need not elaborate. Okay. Yo hablo español. But it's amazing how this issue today, it's very different. Not a question of drafting. When women have a choice, Sheret Lumi or Army. How many religious girls want army, and how many religious girls are already clamoring front line? There was an incident down south. I had a grandson who was on the border with Egypt, and my grandson, because he speaks perfect English, became very important there because he was the liaison with the Egyptian officer. They both spoke English to each other. And from Egypt, across came two terrorists, and who was guiding that part of the border was like half a kilometer from where my grandson was stationed. And it was a famous story. It made the papers. My grandson knew right away. But it made the newspapers here. Two women, frontline soldiers. The one who was irreligious ran and hid behind the tree. And the other girl, who happened to be a B'nai Akiva girl, blew away the terrorists with her gun, got an award afterwards. But I'm not happy about the whole thing. But it's amazing how these questions come back to haunt us. And this issue remains on the top burners. The problem with Rabbi Rachman, the conservative innovations, we spoke about it in great depth last year, but these problems are still with us. And chinuch today, I would take the Rav's 3 points and stress it and elaborate and teach it, and that way we would have a lot more understanding of what the halachic process is about. It's not just whims and wishes of rabbis. It's not just Haredim versus Datiim. It's not just people, males who respect women and males, they lo aleinu, they claim don't. It's no such thing. Any Torah Jew who knows learning and knows Shas and knows Poskim, the respect for women is part of our heritage, part of our understanding. Shema b'kola, what did the Ribbono Shel Olam tell Avraham Avinu, kol amash tomar lecha Sara. I can tell you, let me end off with this, but let me again reveal secrets from the Mossad, the secret I can reveal. Sometimes my wife and I would be sitting in the conference room in Tel Aviv, dealing with very important issues. And there's the boss sitting with Aaron and Malka, and Aryeh Crow, we used to call him the boss, and Malka and I differ. We're discussing an issue, and he says to me, Rav Aaron, Shema b'kola, kol asher tomar lecha Sara, Shema b'kola. All right, I wanted to be a wise guy, I could say, but my wife is not Sarah, she's Malka. But with the boss, let me tell you something, you didn't argue. Believe me, Shema b'kola. All right, these issues are ongoing, and this is the Rav, this is conservative Judaism, this is synagogue council. Nevertheless, with all that we have said, the RCA does not get a definitive decision. The Rav is caught in the middle. He agrees with the Rosh Yeshiva, and he doesn't agree. Am Yisrael, on that level, he doesn't agree. Adat Yisrael, on that level, he does agree. And this issue hangs fire. I'll give you more information, Be'ezrat Hashem, next time we meet. So to reiterate, what did we do today? Essentially, we finished out the Rav's interview, and it's a lot more than just synagogue council, but the whole understanding and comprehension what a Torah Jew is in the modern world, what the halacha is, how we approach the halacha, and where the difference between us and the conservative movement cannot be bridged. And that's in the 50s. You can imagine today when the conservative movement has moved so far beyond the commitment to Dvar Hashem, it's not even recognizable. Today there's a different question, why the conservative and reform movements don't merge. And the answer is, logically they should merge. Across the American continent, you will find many conservative temples are merging because they just don't have enough people. People have moved away. People have left Yiddishkeit. People have become Balei Tshuva. Queens is a perfect example where all the conservative temples have merged into one. You will find across America, there are even examples today where conservative and reform temples merged. They each didn't have enough membership anymore, so they reached a medium happy agreement. The Reform had agreed to a little more Hebrew, and the Conservative agreed to a little more English. But once you say Reform and Conservative merge, you can understand the message. My dear friends, I just want to mention a week ago, I showed this picture, and there was one name I didn't come up with, and it's Joe Fisher. This is the Rav. This picture is from 1954, approximately. This is Benjamin Bleich. This is Rabbi Foreman. This is Billy Millen, Joe Fisher, Irwin Shapiro. And each one, you can do a whole biographical study of what became of them. If anyone is interested, this is Rav Asher Weiss's latest shiur. Rabbi, Professor Tarrigan, I almost gave him smicha like Rabbi Bednash does. Professor Tarrigan handles this part two of Rav Asher Weiss, and it's a very fascinating shiur which deals with accepting a chovah, particularly women. The man is a gaon adir, And he deals, there's something here which I never saw before, that they, I know that women want to hear shofar. That I know, that kiblu aleihem to hear shofar. The whole question of davening mariv, right, kiblu aleihem. What about sukkah? And it seems somebody, I don't know, my wife is the happiest person in the world that she doesn't have to eat in the sukkah. And what about, they bring down that women were makabel on themselves to eat a kezayit in the sukkah the first night. Now, I never heard of that before, but interesting. If anyone wants it, it's yours. Do me a favor, Moshe, stand here and take everything, put it out there. I'm giving out the freebies. This is very interesting on who Nathan Lamport. You all have heard of Nathan Lamport, the auditorium in Yeshiva, the man who gave $200,000 when that would be like giving half a billion today. And this was, he descends. This is, I think the name is Reb Tzvi Hirsch Lamport. Let me get the name. It's a beautiful, he was a Litvisher Rav. And this is a portrait, the Vilna Gaon's picture is right behind him. And his granddaughter is a world historian, professor in Canada. And very fascinating, and there's a picture here, 1933, I believe it is. Let me separate these pages. The Lamport family at right before the Pesach Seder begins. And the girl who's the professor is the third girl here in the white dress. And Menachem Butler, my student from this kollel, the famous Menachem Butler, he's the one who got in touch. This is the sefer of her grandfather, of Reb Tzvi Hirsch Lamport, Piskei Hagra. He put out Svarim, analyzing the Piskei Hagra. You have the Hakdama here, and here is more. Here's the article, my great-grandfather, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Lamport, author of Piskei Hagra. I understand she's not religious, but like she's discovered the family she comes from, and she claims, what's her name? Give me 1 second. She claims her name is Natalie Zimon Davis. Maiden name is Zimon Davis. Married name, evidently, Natalie. She claims she was named in memory of Nathan Lamport. Not claims, she tells us. He died just before she was born. This is on the Ramban. Reb Moshe Habetal wrote a work on the Ramban. Very brilliant fellow from the Hartman Institute, Hebrew U, PhD. He wrote on the Meiri. He wrote on the Ramban, and it's been translated into English. This is a review. This is repercussions of the 1960s on former yeshiva guys in shuls today. This is an article on why we should wear hats in shul, or perhaps now it's no longer the mode, the fashion, to wear a hat. This is Kennedy at his inauguration with a top hat. He looks like a rav in Europe. This is the article, beautiful article, how 1 million Russian immigrants have revolutionized Israel. And this is the article on Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, that in his house there's a chair that has a deep Chabad connection. It turns out that this chair, the sixth Rebbe, sat on this chair. You got to read the article, Chabad, very fascinating, the chair. And I think this is one more reason why Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky's opponents, and he has many opponents, and a good at Yisrael, there just was a bitter battle over him. And one more reason, those who don't like Chabad, one more reason to complain. My dear students, I wouldn't miss next Sunday Shia for all the rice in China and all the falafel in Morocco and all the pizza in Israel. Next Sunday, we move on the tshuva to the Blizhiva Rebbe and what Reb Menashe Klein does. Because of his covered his awe for the Blizhiva Rebbe, and then we move into a question that is unbelievable. are you obligated to build a sukkah in New York City? Could very well be that with Black Lives Matter, forget about sukkah. We will see. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Morty, can you...
The recording has stopped.
And unmute everybody. Are there any questions?
People can unmute themselves.
Okay.
Now, in the topic of Gilles Bonneau, the issue is not years ago.
Yitzchak.
Yeah. Go ahead. Wait, please let Rabbi Rubin speak.
The army is not only whether the frontline soldiers or not. I worked for 20-something years in the Ministry of Education. These are from girls who served as teachers in Ramla and Lourdes and Ekron and in small towns where there wasn't much, and they all produced people who had an appreciation for Yiddishkeit. And in fact, when Shlomo only wanted to take out the Morot Chayalot from Lourdes and Ramla because they were religious girls, and teaching 50% of the time Yadut, the principals called me and begged to keep the girls there because they added so much to the school. So I think that what Ravalin mentioned, that in the time of the Talmud they did logistics, but today they do education work. Right. In places really where socioeconomic issues are very serious, and they're good role models because they come from quality schools.
Let me tell you a story that happened to me. I lectured in the army. It had to be a Asara B'Tevet, I would say. And hundreds of soldiers listening. When the lecture was over, a chayelet comes over to me and asked me, Shaila, is she allowed to take a shower on the fast, on a Asara B'Tevet? And I was so impressed. She was a Morah chayelet. No, you know something, Yitzchak? I think today the Rav would not object to women being drafted to be Morat Chayalot, computers, intelligence, I'm only guessing. But at that time, going back, what they were worried about, and I have to tell you, my heart breaks to say that this is a real problem, that the sexual standards, these girls were going to be challenged. And Rabbi Hutner, my dear neighbor, Rabbi Yoshua Hutner, told me a story that there was once a very difficult case in the Beit HaGadol, and a lady came from the army to testify, and Rav Herzog was so impressed with her, and this lady's testimony solved the problem. And Rav Herzog, the lady said to him, you don't know what I had to go through to get permission to come. My commander wanted to, with me, with me, and then he would give me permission. And Rav Hutner told me, Rav Herzog shook. He shook. He was a great Zionist. But that's what we were up against. Remember, Moshe Dayan, what he accomplished in the army and what he accomplished for himself and his sexual desires, which has become public knowledge. So in the early 50s, there was a tremendous fear of putting girls under command of men. I would say today, because of the sexual outcry, the Me Too, I'm told it has affected the army as well, and they can't take liberties with women. So what you're saying is very correct. But nevertheless, time has moved on, and you see the women today, even some religious women, they're not satisfied with Morat Chayalot and computers. And I have a granddaughter-in-law, I think I showed you the picture years ago, at her final Sheva Brachas, it was the war broke out down south, and she came in uniform to the final Sheva Brachas. So I have, Ariane, listen to this, I have a picture of her with my grandson, and here she is in uniform with her bars over here. She was a full lieutenant, and her hair is covered down to here. I showed this to Satnach Siddim. They couldn't comprehend it. They couldn't believe it. They thought it was a photo montage. I said, no, this is my granddaughter-in-law. You should know, she was so big in intelligence that when it's time to leave the army, they offered her a fortune to remain in the army, putting her up to major, promising her she would be a scholar. She's a very brilliant girl. She's getting a PhD now from Tel Aviv U. But today they have women who want to be frontline soldiers. The Western world has affected them so. Hollywood has affected them so. The computer shooting. I don't know. It bothers me. I think we have to keep women. God forbid that women should lose the feminine mystique. If that happens, the world comes to an end. Chickens will not lay eggs. I'm referring to the Gemara in Sanhedrin and the Gemara in you. Yeah. Herb.
Did Malka tell you that I called you?
Did you hear the start of the lecture where I gave you a mazel tov?
No, I came late.
Don't blame me for telling.
I'm not, but I figured you're the first guy I called.
I told
Shabbos.
I told thousands of people an hour and a half ago that Herbie Maltz deserves a big mazel tov. His son, who is an accomplished periodontist, etc., just got yodin. And think
of Yodin, he's a Dayan.
A Dayan, and think when you came out of the Shoah and you couldn't read or write, and someone would have told you your grandson will not only live in Israel, but will get your son, Kol HaKavod. So we all salute you.
I just want you to know that I called you first.
I know, so you should know I called you back and left a message. Go to your messages, and you'll hear my voice of yesterday. Go to yutorah.org, and you'll hear my voice of today. Anybody else? We got to.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Regards to Jackie. Nachum, I got your letter. I got to read it in detail. Yeah, go ahead. Nachum, yeah.
I think the Rav was being very prescient there when he talked about halacha and how it's fashionable, because lately, you know, I read these articles, like there was one of the YU professor wrote one, I remember, about gays in one of the YU papers. And it's not just him. Anybody who writes about the topic from his point of view, you see they say over and over, they talk halacha, halacha. They're always saying halacha this, halacha that. And you read the article, and you're like, it turns it into like an avodah zarah, so to speak. I mean, anything can be an avodah zarah. So you pick apart the halacha and you're reading it, and you're like, and what's the real, you know, what does God have to say? You know, like, he's gone. Hashem isn't there anymore because you're so big, oh, we're following the halacha. Everything we do is this. And I think he was right 50 years ago, and you see what happens.
Well, it becomes a terminology that becomes popular, but the concept of surrender is what we lack in the modern Western world. And this is the greatest challenge to us who teach Torah. I hope my students who are teaching are listening to that. If there's a God in the world, there have to be demands. You're right? One person says, I believe in God. I remember in the army, I'll never forget this, it was down south, this base doesn't exist anymore. When Israel left the Sinai, it was a very big Air Force base. The American government helped us with a lot of money. We rebuilt the base in near Beersheba. But I yet lectured in the original base down. I was in Africa, Sinai. So there were hundreds. We're hearing a plane. Right. So there were hundreds and hundreds of soldiers. And when the lecture was over, you open it for questions, and one of the commanders, he had high rank, I think it was a Skana Luf, he got up and said, how do I know God exists? And without batting an eyelash, I said, Hamafakeid? Zesh atasha wel shelakazat, zokaraya hachimochetzet. Sheyesh Elokim. And I explained myself. I said, what troubles you? You're the happiest guy in the world. Look at your rank. You're married. you have a wonderful world, you live, you're doing, you're achieving, but somehow you're not happy. You're troubled, you're searching. I don't want to quote the Pasuk, Lev Rishom Niagash, I don't want the Pasuk Rishoyim, but something troubles you. What troubles you? Because your inner soul, what God put into me, Pachme Yepav Ruach Hayim, Midilena Fach, I quoted the Targum to him, I said, you're searching, seeking, you're seeking holiness, saintliness, godliness. It's the greatest proof. Anyway, I got to tell you, the answer was applauded, but I was very touched by that moment. And a few months later, I asked the rabbi of the base, what happened to that Skanaluf who asked the question? He told me, lo yuman, you won't believe it. He became a total, complete Bala Tshuva. So maybe my answer played, you know, he was on the way at the time, but maybe my answer pushed him a little bit forward. We can't give up, we can't give up. Torah is the best skor in the world. And we just, re'u utamu ki tov. Let people understand it, let them taste it. But that's the biggest problem, surrender. It's very easy to say, I believe in halacha, this I choose, this I don't choose. Of course, that's...
You know, there were two conservative thinkers, one Milton Steinberg, and the other a man called Will Herbert.
What's the other one? Will?
Will Herbert.
Herbert, yeah. Herbert,
so both of them wrote that we can't help ourselves. There is a spiritual need within each human being to find God. Because it's built in the neshama. It's part of the neshama. The neshama is like a magnet draws you. You feel you have to come to our control.
Right.
Then, of course, both of them, when it came to believing in revelation and in Shmirat Mitzvot, they relaxed. But nonetheless, on this part, both of them are on target. They said all the different arguments, cosmological, theological arguments, and all these arguments don't reach the person. It's the neshama that really needs
right.
The neshama.
Right. So I want to end off. I'm going to show your face. Let them see you. Okay. Yomo, when he sits down next to me like this, it means we have to end, because yesterday it seems I went overtime and Rabbi Miller had to start later, and today I don't want to start up with Rabbi Bednash. But I want to tell you one thing. It's in my book on the Rav. When the Rav is told, it's in volume 2, when the Rav is told that there's a Baal Tshuva movement beginning in Russia, the Rav says, I refuse to believe it, it can't be. Remember, I've quoted this many times, the Rav was so frightened of communism, he saw what they did in Khaslovich. And then the Rav says, but if it's true, and he said exactly what you said, exactly what I said when I answered that Skanaluf, that it's a sign of the soul in man that you can't nude it, you can't get rid of it, you can't abrogate it. That soul seeks saintliness, godliness. And he says, if this is true, after so many years without Rabbanim, without yeshivat, without education, and the people are coming back, it's the soul within them that can't be silenced. All right, and Baruch Hashem, this is who we are. It's very powerful. Bidileihu nafach. That God breathed into man from himself, bidileihu nafach, very, very powerful. Okay, I want to thank everyone for participating and joining with me, and we should only have b'sora tova, yeshuot v'nechamot, oleinu b'al kol Yisrael, until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya. Thank you.